You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Am I joining you? Remains to be seen.
Well, you are. Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And sitting in for Tina this week is Michael Swaim.
I am joining you. I can confirm that. Checked with my yes. representation.
All right. All right. We got a brown noser on the team.
Well, we've got a great show for this week. We'll talk a little bit more about Horizon, which I'm still playing, and I want to get Swaim's thoughts on it. Actually, I'm just assuming that he's playing it. I didn't even ask him if he's playing it before this. We'll find out in just a moment. We'll also take a look back at this week in gaming history. Some notable titles are enjoying a birthday this week. But first, you know, when we're recording this episode, it's still a few hours until Elden Ring is out by the time this episode's published. It'll be out and a bunch of our viewers and listeners will be playing it, I'm sure. But I don't know about you guys. I can't remember a time when hype for a game was this high before release as it is for Elden Ring.
I mean, they nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously people have been looking forward to this game for a long time. And now like the reviews are out this week. It got a 10 from IGN, the first 10 of 2022. But it's received universal acclaim across the board, one of the best reviewed games in modern history. I feel like people are more excited for this game than any game I can remember on the eve of its release.
I do think it's that those reviews, like the promise of like, yeah. FromSoft is finally making an open world Dark Souls game, like the thing that people have been asking for forever. But like, I think it was an open question, like, will they pull it off? Like, have they bit off more than they can chew? And so, like, that anticipation level combined with, you know, 10 from IGN, 10 from GameSpot, like, universal, overwhelming acclaim, like, one of the highest reviewed games of all time. Like, I think that's what's really sent the hype into the stratosphere of, like, if this game was getting, you know, 8s, which is still a great score. 8 is great on the IGN review scale, but, yeah. like, it's punched through into that echelon of, like, greatest of the greats, just in terms of like, you know, critical opinion, that like that it's earned it a new sort of sheen of hype on the eve of release, in my opinion.
Yeah. Over on Metacritic, it sits at a 97. Only four games have received a score higher than that, at 98, Ocarina of Time being one of them. So at Metacritic, it sits with Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, Red Dead Redemption 2, and Gran Turismo 5. And then over at OpenCritic, it's got a 96. The only game to ever beat that score is Mario Odyssey with a 97. and it sits alongside Breath of the Wild, Red Dead Redemption 2, and Gran Turismo 5. So, I mean, like, that seems to be like the caliber of game that we're dealing with here. I haven't gotten to play it yet. I think my code got stuck in the mail somewhere. Sam, did you press start on Elden Ring yet?
Yeah, I played a few hours of it. You know, the tutorial asks you to jump off a cliff.
Yeah,
I think it's to jump off a cliff.
I think that's the general sentiment of a Souls-like game, right? Mm. Yeah, it's like a guy's like, hey, Wanderer, you know, it doesn't say this is where the tutorial is. It's just like, take the plunge or something, and then you jump off there, and that's the tutorial is. If you don't jump off the cliff, then you don't get a tutorial, and you just get put out in the open world.
Okay.
About the same as having a tutorial in a game like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think people that like Dark Souls are going to love this, and it's going to attract probably a very small new audience of people that will buy this because of the tens and then hopefully enjoy it, but maybe a lot of them won't because it's the same thing. That's not a criticism. It's just the same thing.
That's interesting. You think there's going to be a very small audience that aren't existing Soulsborne fans?
Well, that stick with it. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it's like every time one of these comes out, it's like, this is the one. This is the one you're all going to get into. And it happens with Monster Hunter also. And like, this game is not made to welcome a new audience. Again, not a criticism. People don't want that. It's totally fine. But like, this is not doing that.
But it claims to be like, and this is the thing.
It claimed that the ending would be attainable for more people, which I don't know what that makes sense.
But it has a tutorial instead of being like, fucking figure it out.
Well, they all have the same idea where it's like you can sneak around and stab people, or you can block people, or. But you know what's funny is that once they turn you over into the open world, they start piling on things. It's like, well, you know, this thing allows you to summon spirits and this and this and this. And this thing is a dagger that allows you to cast things. And it's like, none of that makes any sense when you get the things. You can't even do it until later. And so that's kind of like a funny thing that happens. But also, it's completely missable. So it's like you can miss all of the important stuff. You could not craft the entire game unless you buy something at the first merchant, for example. It's really funny. So like, use a strategy guide no matter what.
Like, the game being open world, sorry, Swim, is like, it's such a blessing and a curse of like the oppressive difficulty of those games, or like, not oppressive difficulty, but the thing that's so demoralizing about them is like, there's a boss, it feels impossible, and you have to beat it. Like, the only way, you just have to go through that boss, and that's the only thing that you can do. Whereas in Elden Ring, you can just leave. Yeah. You can just say, no, thank you. And you can just turn around and walk in another direction. And that's so freeing and so important to how difficult and oppressive and sort of challenging these games feel, knowing that you have the freedom and option to go somewhere else. But the thing that makes it a double-edged sword is I could already tell if I were to play this game, I would never be sure. I'm like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing right now? Or that uncertainty of like, did I accidentally skip five bosses ahead and I'm beating my head against the wall, or like, no, or is this actually supposed to be this hard? And so that freedom of choice, like in this game, you can just hose your character build. Like, well, I built my character the wrong way, and now, you know, in 30 hours, I'll get the option to respec. So like, I'm drawn to Elden Ring. I'm considering it, but like, I don't know. I don't know. I keep getting fooled by these Souls-like games.
Yeah, I just don't. Go ahead, Swain. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm the exact demographic that we're like dancing around, where they feel almost like Academy Award nominees or Criterion Collection releases, where I'm like, all right, I know I'm supposed to really like this. I better settle in and like engage with it as a piece of art and start chipping away at, you know, I do need that release valve. So it's very exciting that it's open world. I think I am in that small percentage who hopefully will be won over by all the systems changes. And it's just different enough, because I will say, of all the From Software games, and I've played them all and I've never completed any of them, I got the closest with Sekiro, and I did like it the most because it had that release valve of, there was a stealth component. There was an additional system that varied like what the way in which you could interact with that difficulty curve. But I really wonder, speaking of 96 on Metacritic, like who the stinker is and what their issue was with it. Because, yeah, it just seems like a big mountain to climb. And I just finished Sifu, which also felt like that. But somehow it was more, brought me back to like Streets of Rage sort of feeling. And I was okay with that.
And you got through it, though.
I barely got through it, but it does have those moments where you just stop and you play that boss 25 times in a row. Metroidvania is probably my favorite like subgenre of game, and those have those too. And for some reason, I'm okay with that. I was okay with Sifu. I am not okay with the bosses in From Software games. So I'm very excited that you can just walk away. I'm also still a stalwart, like never use a guide or look anything up guy, which I think just might be my problem and my fault. Like, I don't know that we live in a reality. I mean, look, I can pick up my phone and connect to any piece of information humanity's ever recorded. Why am I still like, I don't use strategy guides? I don't really know, but I am that way. And so I'll just pick up like, you know, that's the other thing with the lore in these games is you'll pick up like a piece of doom chalk and it'll say like, well, you could wipe this on your blade to make it, you know, and you have to play with everything to figure out. You go, oh, I see. That brings people in for co-op. I had no idea. I had to write a welcome sigil with my doom chalk or what have you. But the other big piece of news that we reported on recently is that the co-op seems to be opened up, right, in a very considerable way. And I'm very excited about that. Because I do have that annoying From Software friend who they are all his favorite games. And he's like, well, just stick with me, Swaim. I'll just co-op you through the whole thing. And I think that's what I'm going to do. And I think hopefully that will make it like digestible for me. Yeah. And I think that's a totally valid way to play through these. I don't know if there's a certain like dopamine rush people seem to get when they finally do master it and beat that boss after the 25th time. I don't, man. I just get really, really discouraged. And when I finally beat one of the bosses, I go, oh, thank goodness. Now more like exploring. Because the thing that does really capture my imagination is monster design and the level design. Like the worlds are just so incredible. It's one of From Software games are games that I love to watch streamed. And I don't watch a lot of casual streams. But I'll just like muse on... Man, whoever drew Sekiro really nailed it. He looks so cool. That wooden arm is so great. I can't play it for beans, but whatever. You know, it's a fun ride. So here's hoping. I mean,
they keep the thing that I really respect about FromSoft, even though, you know, I think I've made my peace with the fact that these games aren't for me, is that that developer in that studio is not sitting still, right? Like Bloodborne and Sekiro, like the Dark Souls games were like, 80s-ish on Metacritic. And again, not that Metacritic is the end-all be-all, but like as a summary of like overall critical opinion, you know, they're in the 80s. And then you had Dark Souls, or you had Bloodborne and Sekiro at like a 90. And now you have Elden Ring at a 95. And they keep pressing themselves, and Sekiro being so much more action-oriented and arcadey, and then Elden Ring, you know, shifting into the open world. Like, it didn't have to be that way. Like, a lesser studio would be making Dark Souls 5 by now, and it would be the same stuff and the same bonfires. And their willingness to sort of continue evolving this genre and sort of just go from strength to strength and say, you know, no, we're the kings of making this kind of game is, you know, like nothing but respect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been super happy playing Horizon, as I mentioned last week. But, you know, I feel like any game that gets a 10 from IGN and receives universal acclaim as Elden Ring has, I feel like it's my responsibility to at least check it out, you know, as a video game commentator, pundit, whatever you want to call this thing that I do with my career. So I will be checking it out. But Sam, at least from your you played a couple hours of it. It sounds like it didn't immediately change your mind. On your stance on these games. Is that correct?
I mean, I've played enough of Dark Souls 3, like, you know, whatever, 6 to 8 hours of it, that I knew when I quit, like, I'd had enough of it. And, like, I'm not to that point at all, a couple hours in. Like, I want to play more of this game. And I think it's cool. Like, I'm really excited to try something this time that might get me more into this game. I have an open mind, and I used our Things to Do First guide, which was, like, incredibly helpful. Incredibly helpful for this game. And now I'm at a point where this is not fun, but it's part of the game. I have to beat the same enemies over and over again and level up to use a weapon. And expect a lot of that, right? It's like the enemies in my region can either kill me immediately or I can kill them slowly. And I have to kill a lot of those enemies, you know, slowly. There's a few areas I can stealth and kill a bunch of enemies, but they don't give me enough runes anymore. So it's like, I'm in that place where it's like, yes, there's some open worldness, but like, really what I need to do is get stronger to do the next thing in the game. And that means grinding. And I'm not, you know, I don't know if I'm going to like that grinding or not. I did a similar amount of grinding in Horizon that I really liked, that I've talked about, where it's like knocking components off dinosaurs to make better weapons, to knock more components off dinosaurs. Like, that loop really worked for me. So just looking for that loop in this game. I might have to scrap this character and respec entirely and start over. I don't know. I have no idea. Like, it's so hard to tell because there's so many systems that are like opaque. I mean, like, I can't do anything but use a sword and shield right now. Like, that's, there's a lot of systems in this game, but like, they're not, you can't just start out being like, I'm a magic user. Here's a bunch of magic I'm throwing around. Like, you know, everybody's going to start in kind of the same place.
In your first,
go ahead.
Just one quick question. In your first couple hours, is the participation of George R.R. Martin evident at all?
Oh, no. There's just like, there's like, you know, a couple sentences of like establishing the world, and it's a bunch of fantasy catchphrases, you know, like, this ring was broken up and the round table took it on. And like, that's real stuff that I'm talking about there.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. So it's still sort of arcane. It's like, and you get little pieces and you have to sort of fill it in.
It's arcane with little pieces, and like George R. R. Martin filled in the Mad Libs, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And again, like, that's not a bad thing. I don't care enough about this game to criticize it at this point. I need to play more of it. But like, it's not like you're going to go in there and be like, wow, this is what Game of Thrones season 8 should have been.
I already know. I can see it. I'm going to get the game and install it. And then I'm going to get to the first or second boss and be like, yep, I still don't like these games.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'll go into it with an open mind. When I get a chance, I will go into it with an open mind. And I'll report back.
And I always leave feeling bad about myself.
Yep. It's like, this is the last one, Damon, where like, after this, I'm happy for y'all. But you know what? It's just not for me.
Till Elden Ring 2 gets an 11 and 110 out of 100. And then you just, they pull you back in, you know?
Yep. But I do suspect a bunch of people are going to read these reviews and see the Metacritic score, and for the rest of our lives, buy this game. So, like,
yeah,
that's going to be interesting.
I do like the last point I wanted to make, and it's something that Mitchell really pointed out in his review for IGN was like, I don't mind. I have this reputation as like, Justin doesn't like hard games. Like, I'll play crazy hard games. I just get so demoralized and upset about like lost progress and being sent way back and doing stuff again. Like, I'll try something 50 times and grind my way through it if I can like retry right then. And so this game being a little bit more generous and tighter with its checkpoints and save points of like, before a hard boss, there's a save point and you don't need to go through an enemy gauntlet again. Like, for me, that has potential to be a total game changer, because like, I'll bang my head against something as long as I don't have to get 15 minutes to get there again. Mm-hmm. So that's like a tiny, you know, tiny, not so tiny detail that actually makes me really intrigued and more interested in checking out Elden Ring.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Hasn't been an issue with this. Like, the save spots have been really near where I die each time and stuff like that. So that's good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I would kind of mention this in MVC. We talked about Elden Ring a little bit, and I just kind of edged into this. But like, for me, playing this game right now is like playing Madden, and I don't
Madden.
I know football. Like, I know how it works and I've played football, but like, I don't remember anything. I never watch any football. And like, I don't, like, if I had to sit there and like learn the controls for Madden, like play a football game, like that wouldn't be like in any way easy for me to learn without, you know, lots of tutorials and guides and stuff like that. And like, there's a class of people that have already had that done and they know all this. And so I've talked about Elden Ring all day, every day for weeks now. And it's like, you know, and I'll bring up something like, hey, you know, it seems weird to me that, you know, you have to, like, I just got a, for instance, this is a real thing. I just risked my butt a whole lot, and I went into some places I shouldn't have and did the thing you're supposed to do, which, like, delve out, right? Which I really like doing in games anyway. That's, like, my favorite thing. I was talking about that. So this game has that in spades. So I did that, and then my reward was, like, cool high-level weapons. And I was like, oh, these are awesome. And I go to equip them, and I'm like, well, I won't be able to use these weapons for 3 years because like, because they're not for me. They're like, they require strength, whatever. And I have strength 6, you know? And so it's like, what was the risk reward there? Really? Like, what really was it? It was just risk. It was just BS, right? Like, yeah. I could have gone there when I was leveled up and done that. So that is not a universal problem with these games. That is a thing that I did not know about these games that I needed to know, right? That is a rule that this game is not going to tell you unless you do that. And like, the game did teach me that. I now know, like, hey, stupid, don't go delving like that anymore. But like, also, isn't that the point of the game? So like it's just like, I don't know. That's the demoralizing stuff that Michael's talking about, which like some people get a kick out of, and like, I'll be open-minded about it. But like, I think that's bullshit.
At the same time, I'm excited to see an open world treatment. Well, I mean, I've scrupulously avoided like finding out about the systems and whatnot. Are there outposts of low level baddies you clear out? And are there
viewpoints you
climb to?
Oh, viewpoints? No, there's no viewpoints, but like there is like a outpost type thing that happens where it's like a cluster of like enemies. Like there's really early on, there's like a soldier base, right? And they're all guarding treasure chests and like cool stuff. And you can infiltrate that with stealth if you want, you know, which is a big part of it, you know, which is cool. Or you can lead people out with, you know, arrows if you have that as part of your build. There's all kinds of ways to do it. And that's, you know, it's like baby's first Metal Gear. Like it's that low, you know, this game is not built around systems like that, but it's in there, you know?
Yeah.
And there's dogs that hunt you and they get up on top of a wall. They just spin like a flat circle, like they're on a, you know, like a turntable. That's another thing about these games. Like the gameplay is so intense in them that like, you cannot bend a bunch of like graphics to be amazing in them, because like everything has this long animation and like that means it's going to spin look funny a lot, you know? Like, right. It's just like, it's really funny to see this, like after seeing like even Horizon, where it's like, well, these dinosaurs are complex and crazy, but like they always kind of look like they're dinosaurs attacking you. Whereas this game looks like a character model attacking you a lot of the time. And it might be really cool. No problem with that.
I'll push back just slightly. The slide in Horizon goes so far. Yeah, I've never seen anyone slide so far.
She can slide for like 20 feet, 30 feet. It's crazy.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free, as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Horizon and outposts and viewpoints, Swain, did you play Forbidden West?
Oh yes, absolutely. I'm wearing my bright purple and pink, like big blocky colors in honor of the Tanakh. I'm very into it. It should be called Horizon 1 Dawn as the sequel to Zero Dawn. I maintain that. But I'm really enjoying Forbidden West. I gotta say, when I played Zero Dawn, I felt very much like, I remember thinking repeatedly, what a great ground floor to get in on. It felt a little light in the terms of systems and mechanics, but I found myself thinking repeatedly, man, the sequel to this is gonna rip. And I really think by and large it does. Like, I can nitpick little things like the slide. Aloy doesn't make eye contact with people enough. That weirds me out. But by and large, like, the combat's deeper. I find that they took things that were in the first game, like, you know, shooting an arrow to make rocks fall or what have you. And they combine them really smartly with the new stuff like the pullcaster and the shield wing, to just make, I find the emergent gameplay of the combat situations much deeper. I just was obsessed with Sifu. I'm a real big fan of Sifu, if you couldn't tell. And I think the only thing that I could compare it like unfavorably in that regard is that the melee combat, the bow and arrow combat is like unparalleled. I think I love the tripcaster and all the new stuff they added, whatever. The one where you like high lie, throw a spinny disc is also great. But the melee combat to me feels a little floaty and a little disconnected, but I feel like that's because I'm playing it in the wake of Sifu, where everything just felt so tight and like every punch was so crisp and meaty. So I like to stealth and I like to use my bow and arrow. I don't really like getting into spear fights with like human enemies, especially, but I also just realized today I have more of the warrior tech tree to unlock that will allow me to apparently jump off of enemies' chests and shoot them from the air. So I'm very much looking forward to doing that. I will say we're spoiled for choice. It's like expansive in the true sense of the word. So much you can do, so many places go.
That's like,
and to compare to Elden Ring, or just like to grind in this game, to, or at least to get more powerful and level up quickly, there's like 8 different types of things you can do. It's not just go through the corridor again and fight the same baddies again. It feels like, you know, you can climb and do a climbing puzzle and collect a lens, or you could go craft an upgrade, or you can shoot parts off dinosaurs and craft more, or you can just explore. Exploration is my favorite. I think, like, short of, personally, I'm a big weather and lighting guy, and short of Red Dead Redemption 2, I think this is the best like lighting and weather system I've ever seen.
Seriously,
in a game.
I'll agree with that.
Very beautiful.
Falling snow. And
yeah, she loves to comment on the snow too. The flakes on her lashes and whatnot.
Yeah.
Guess we'll try off later.
Send this to my stash. I'm still playing it every day. I still love it. I think I've moved the story forward very little, because like I said last week, I'm just running around to question marks on my map and just doing whatever happens to be there. But I think, Sam, maybe you'll back me up on this. To Swain's point about the melee, I don't think the combat system in Horizon is really meant to be played as a melee. I think it's mostly
rolling in arrows, right?
Yeah, my spear is just for like, you know, whatever the their stealth kills are and your overrides. That's
you can do like no damage with it, and then with your there's also the critical strike when you sneak up, when you go up to someone when it's knocked down. I love that, but yeah, totally. Like, it's like I love a lot of the weapons we talked about last week, but like the spike thrower, the exploding spikes are super cool. And like, once you start mixing up with like, I'm doing elemental damage with this thing, and then I'm going to do damage with this other thing, it's all projectile based. Yeah. I feel like Boltcaster's great too.
Yeah.
And the world, just combination of future and past elements always gets me. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah. The San Francisco area is really cool too.
Yeah.
Swaim, this reminded me when you asked about if Elden Ring had towers. It does have things that reveal the map that serve the purpose of towers. And so if you're going to go like that, like you're going to climb a tower, what are they called? Tall necks? Like Elden Ring does have that as like little monuments you walk up to, and then it reveals the map. So it does have that. So if I've seen one enemy base and I've seen one of that, then it's we can go ahead and start calling it a Far Cry like, right?
That's the thing is, I guess, as appealing as it is for a lot of people to see From Software do an open world game, I'm a big fan of open world games who finds them to sort of converge and become samey. And I'm excited to see a company as unique as From Software do that for the sake of that formula being changed up a bit. So I'm hoping it is decidedly different from a thing like Far Cry 6 or even a Horizon.
Well, I'd like to start thinking of it that way then. I'll start trying to play it as like a discover areas, you know, open world game, and see how punishing that is.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so that's Elden Ring and Horizon. And Justin, you're still playing Cyberpunk?
I love it so much. I mean, like I said last week, I loved it the first time around, and I made it past, like, I played maybe 20 hours of it at launch, and I'm past that now. So I'm into new content, which is really exciting. You know, obviously a lot has been made about the visual fidelity. I'm playing in performance mode and 60 FPS, but there's like underrated, it was like one little bullet in their patch notes where they redesigned kind of the combat AI to make them more aggressive, and they switch weapons more and use cover more. And like, that totally changes the way the game plays, in my opinion. Like, I'm feeling pressed by enemies a lot more often. There's dudes with swords and stuff sneaking up behind me and causing me to sort of scramble around and use the combat arenas more. So like there's tiny, like the rebalancing of the skill trees actually makes you put a little bit more care and consideration in how you build your character. So like the visual upgrades on the next gen consoles, or, you know, current gen consoles, is you know, not to be written off. Like, that's obviously the most visible improvement that they made. But, you know, CD Projekt has continued kind of tinkering under the hood, and I think just made what was already a pretty impressive game a lot better.
I do look forward to, you know, I've mentioned I've revisited a lot of the best games of the past few years when they were upgraded for next gen. I played through God of War and Ghost of Tsushima and Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order over again. So the next time there's a lull in new releases, I'll jump back into Cyberpunk.
Wait, one more tiny. I just like the when the game launched, it was almost laughable how you got into the open world and then it just dumped a billion side quests on you. Mm. And like, this is such a tiny change, and it's actually a superficial change. Like, but it doles them out to you now. So like, you don't get all the side quests at once and gigs at once. Like, it gives them to you over time. And like, the difference that that makes in how like alive the world feels, and it feels like you're building up relationships with these people and these fixers. Mm. Like, it's a total night and day difference, even though it's like a tiny change of like, you know, I'm just getting random texts from people now that I haven't, you know, it's like, oh, it was last week I was doing a mission for you, and then they want me to go do something else for them. And like, it makes it feel really different, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
So I think you said you liked Cyberpunk. Will you play it again?
Oh yeah. I've just started a Nomad, and I'm cool. Just got the chip. I won't spoil anything if people haven't played it, but it feels finished. So if you were waiting like No Man's Sky style for the product to be finished, it does feel finished now. And I had a lot of fun with it the first time through. Cause I was playing it on the new gen systems and, didn't run into too many glitches, definitely nothing game breaking, but I gotta say it feels completely refreshed. I agree with Justin 100%. It's great.
Nice.
There's still one really funny bug that I've mostly, like, I see some normal open world bugginess, but like one sort of Cyberpunk specific thing is whenever a character has something in their hand, I'd say there's a 10% chance that where their character model is and where their phone or whatever is will be out of sync. And so then there's a phone flying wildly through the air as the character model's doing their animation or whatever. Like, they're not locked up with things in their hands. And like, cool. It's those kind of bugs that, like, you know, they're almost more fun than just like, well, great, now I have to go back 30 minutes to restore a save. Like, nasty bugs. Mm. Those have all been squashed.
And they've completely changed the way the screen on delivery drop points looks, but delivery is still spelled wrong, which makes me wonder if it was intentional the whole time, or they're just trying to make it seem like it was intentional the whole time.
They changed it, but left it wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's deliberate.
It's gotta be.
Okay. This week in gaming history, looking back, the games that were released this week, the week of February 21st, some notable releases that we've played in the past. 3 years ago in 2019, Anthem was released.
Oh boy. I played a lot of Anthem.
You played a lot of it?
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I know.
Well, it's, what I think is interesting and very sad, actually, is this week, 3 years ago, Anthem was released. This week, 1 year ago, BioWare announced development was ending on Anthem.
2 years of support for that game, though.
2 years of support. They tried for 2 years.
Yeah.
I can't believe you played a lot of it,
Sam. Well, because we talked about it on GameScoop at the time. I was trying to figure out if it was fun to play a single player without, you know, any online hanky-panky, right? So I just took missions and played. There was just, like, nothing else out. I just played a bunch of it, and it's not fun. That's the answer.
Yeah,
it's kind of dull. You know, it's like, it had some cool flying, and it felt good sometimes, but, you know, it was mainly just go clear out enemies and go home.
Yeah. BioWare is in a sad state. I know they've got another Dragon Age, another Mass Effect they're working on. Hopefully they can turn things around. And this week, 2018, here's a good one. Metal Gear Survive.
Oh boy.
Yeah, Konami's first Metal Gear without Kojima.
And last.
Metal Gear in name only, I think. It was like an open world survival, kind of a roguelike game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very few people remember that one. This week in 2016, Far Cry Primal was released. A game that I really like. I know it's not a popular Far Cry game, but it's very unusual to play a game in a prehistoric setting. I think. Mm-hmm. And I like Far Cry, and I liked that one a lot too.
Was Far Cry in an early part of like Q1 zone for a while? Was it
Far Cry 5 was also early like February, and then Far Cry New Dawn was in the same.
Yeah,
and then
that's cool.
To be, you know, remember Far Cry 6 was supposed to be out in February last year.
Correct.
Got delayed from that. Mm-hmm. 2015, The Order 1886.
Sure.
PS4 exclusive. Was that?
Yeah. One of the oddly best looking PS4 games kind of ever.
Yeah.
Very good. That's a really tough 20 questions for us every time you pick it.
Every time. Yeah. And going back, man, there's some interesting games that are out this week. 2012, Asura's Wrath. Mm-hmm. Who remembers Asura's Wrath from Capcom?
I think and I went to a preview of that at E3, Damon, or we just played it on the show floor, but it was just like a long QuickTime event.
It's like anime QuickTime events, the game. Mm-hmm. And it was actually pretty good. It's an unusual one-off from Capcom, a developer that loves to make sequels. 2011 was Bulletstorm. Remember that? Yeah. I mean, they remade it remastered it recently. Very strange shooter where it leaned on just like profanity and over the top.
It was like a Duke Nukem-esque. Yeah. They had funny kicking mechanics in that. Yeah. Remember that? You could shoot people, then kick them really far. And then they sent us a pack of hamburger meat with hair and bullet casings in it to the office.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but wow.
Quite a PR stunt.
I either beat Bulletstorm or, you know, played through like many, many hours of it. And the only thing I can specifically recall is the kicking.
Yeah.
Just there's so much of it.
Lots of kicking.
And it was so satisfying.
In 2010, another PlayStation exclusive was released for PS3. Heavy Rain was out this week.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 10 years ago.
I wonder I'd love to hear if Swaim has an opinion on Heavy Rain. It seems like it might be your kind of game.
I haven't gotten around to it yet. About it, but never played it now. You're into the weeds for me now. I don't know Bulletstorm either. Yeah.
Origami. Remember the Origami Killer?
The Origami Killer.
That's okay. It just clicked. Yeah. At least I can imagine the cover in my head now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Heavy Rain, I'm not going to spoil it. This 12-year-old game. It's got one of the biggest, most egregious plot holes in any sort of like story-driven game of all time. If you think about it for more than a second, the entire game makes no sense. But
I love stories like that. That sounds right up my alley for sure.
Yeah, I'll tell you after.
It has a Sean button, right? When you walk around and shout Sean.
It's not Jason. Isn't it Jason?
Jason? Is that Jason. What it is? I can't remember.
Jason.
That sounds right. Two syllables.
Jason.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the other son might be Sean.
Okay.
It's another game that I played through the whole thing and can barely recall.
I definitely beat Heavy Rain.
And finally, released this week in 2007, the original Crackdown was out.
Oh boy, yeah.
Notably, it included a demo of Halo 3, right?
Yep. Yeah,
love that demo.
It was a clap. Like that game sold a million people bought that game just to play Halo 3 for like 2 or 3 weeks or whatever. But then Crackdown won those people over based off its own quality and own merits. And that was the journey that I went on where I'm like, okay, this game's pretty good.
Yeah.
Although I will forever, I know I've brought it up on the show before, but it's law that I have to bring it up anytime Crackdown comes up, where I got 499 of the 500 fucking orbs in that game. And I never found the last one to this day. And like, there's no like homing device or map, and you can't use like a game guide because it just has 500 dots on it. And I don't know which one I don't have. And so that achievement is just forever sitting there unachieved. And I had 498 forever. And then I found one of them. And then I never found the last one. I'm still heated about it, Damon.
Yeah, I can tell. I mean, that's two F-bombs from you this episode. So
that's true.
I know you're feeling spicy. Yeah.
We're
no longer in PG-13 territory here.
Got a platinum trophy at home with one of the ears just knocked off.
Yeah. Okay. I'll keep it under my hat.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like David Salazar did. And he has a simple question. He just wants to know, is it hit points or health points? HP.
Well, David, I hear you have an answer to this question.
Well, I have an answer to your question, which was, what does D&D refer to it as?
Mm-hmm.
Which is hit points, I believe. Unless, you know, I imagine Swain has played more D&D than I have.
That's right, though. Or it's classically hit points, but they're sometimes they evolve the language, like Dungeon Master became Game Master because you can place your story anywhere. But I am heavily on the
Game
side.
Game Master?
They're not Dungeon Masters anymore?
DM all the time.
No one's going to push back at you for saying DM. But GM
is a general manager.
GM is, well, HP is Hewlett Packard. So, but GM is also in circulation now for sure, especially as DMs, you know, do more and more unorthodox like settings or themes or tones. It's always expanding.
I don't know. I think anything can be a dungeon if you put your mind to it.
Because of D&D, going back to, you know, my earliest memories, I'm always going to say hit points. Yeah. D&D definitely goes hit
points. I've never even heard health points. I think this is an amazing conversation.
And even though I've only ever casually played D&D, I've always just said hit points in video games.
Mm-hmm. I've heard health bar.
Health bar. But your health bar is filled with hit points.
Yeah. And if you say hit bar, get out.
Yeah. There's definitely weird conventions in, you know, a lot of it comes from D&D, but that spill over into like video games, or like my daughter, like once you have kids, you sort of realize how weird some stuff is that like as an adult, you haven't thought about in like decades of like, she wanted to know why health, like, why is it always hearts? Why is your health always hearts? I'm like, yeah, I guess that doesn't really make any kind of sense. But like,
except that it's your own heartbeat. Your health is, you know, represented by your own heartbeat.
Yeah, right? But like, you know, you got a brain.
But your whole body, right? It could be a little brain.
It should just be little turkeys. Then we learned that in Castlevania.
There's just like
food based. It's mutton. Yeah.
There's like cultural stuff that like you just absorb. And then what's a little sad is now she's 7 and like I don't get those questions as much anymore because like now, you know, she knows a little bit more about how the world works. But like when they're really little, you get funny questions about that like make something in your brain just go like pop where you're like, oh, yeah, that is weird.
You know what they call learning all that? XP.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. Classic for me is the. Like show anyone who's, you know, 20 years or younger, the button that you click on to save a file. And they'll be like, what is that little square with the triangle on the edge? Like, what is that?
I mean, people point out that on like on your phone, like the symbol for to make a call is like an old pickup off the wall phone.
Yeah.
Hello. You know, like, Klondike 455. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't find those anywhere.
No. And why do you hang up a phone when you're done with a phone call?
It is interesting though, if you're thinking of it's hit points or health points, it does sort of change the philosophy of what that represents, right? Because if it's hit points, it's this is how many hits you can take until you expire. And then if it's your health points, this is how much health you have left until you expire. It's just a different way of looking. It's an entirely different way of looking at it.
And if you go all the way back to early D&D, does anyone know the term THACO?
Yeah. I don't know.
That used to be, you'd have to remember your THACO all the time. Instead of AC armor class, it was what it was like, the chance to hit armor class 0.
Yeah, the chance to hit armor class 0. And so a lower number was better. Old D&D was super weird where you would put on armor and instead of mitigating damage, it just made you easier to dodge. Like you weren't like absorbing damage, which is what logically you would think you're doing with armor. But instead, the enemies would just miss more.
Second edition D&D was like the original From Software game. You had to read a giant book to understand how to play it.
Mm-hmm. But this is an acronym? How does it work? How does it
pronounce? Yeah, it's THAC0. So it's THACO and it's chance.
THACO. Okay.
Chance to hit armor class 0.
What is T in there? Why is T in there?
The C is silent.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, it's Two hit armor class zero.
Two hit backup. Armor class zero. Okay. There you go. Thank you. My bad. Wow. I almost had it.
Justin, you were saying you're explaining things like hearts to your daughter. Just reminded me real quick. My 2-year-old son, Kingo, loves Cocoa Melon like most kids mm-hmm. his age. And there is an episode on The Floor is Lava. The kids are playing The Floor is Lava. And any chance I can think of to get him to not watch Cocoa Melon, I was like, I want to show him what actual lava is. And I put on like this 4K video of a volcano erupting on YouTube. And now he's obsessed with lava. And all he wants to do is just watch like video of lava and volcanoes exploding.
Yeah. But dude, like what's crazy is like that stuff spirals of like, you know, next birthday or Christmas, like probably going to want some volcano like book. And then it but that stuff becomes like, it's so much pressure. Like it becomes like a part of their personality
now.
Yeah, that's for like the next 8 years. And then you get like, I'm not into, I haven't been into volcanoes in years, Dad.
I like volcanoes anymore.
All right.
Let's see. This is Jim. Jim writes in to say, longtime listener, first time writer. First off, thanks for all that you guys do. I love the effortless chemistry you guys exude, and Scoop Day is one of my weekly highlights. Same, Jim. Question. I've been a gamer since the NES days, really hitting my stride with the Super Nintendo. Music has always been a big part of the enjoyment of games for me, with games like Chrono Trigger, Donkey Kong, Symphony of the Night, and of course, gems like Link to the Past and Mario being iconic. My first question is, do you think, like I do, that video game music was somehow generally better in the 90s? It could entirely be nostalgia, but I think the constraints of the medium made for better art. In particular, due to memory issues, the music would often loop, making music that much more critical to get right. So I'll admit, this is a topic we've had multiple times on GameScoop, but I love this topic and I'm always happy to have it. Again, to have this discussion again. First of all, whether or not it was better in the 90s, I think that's entirely subjective. Does anyone feel differently?
No.
As no surprise, as the guy who I maybe before we started taping talked about how much I love Kid Chameleon music, I completely agree with the person who wrote in, and I'm so happy they used the word constraints, because I think that's exactly it. Like when I saw what we were going to talk about today, I was like, that's what it was. It was that the mechanics were simpler. You still had to deliver an experience that would keep people engaged over a long period of time. And you only had a simple, like, color palette, so to speak, to work with. I'm just remembering even objectively bad games. Like there's a game called Fatal Rewind or like, Chakan. I forget what the subtitle was, but Pillars of Eternity or something. That's a different game. But regardless, I agree completely. I think it was an aspect of the fact that they had to design on a budget or like on a note budget. And at the same time, we're all trying to top each other. I just think that's so incredible when you get to the point where a game soundtrack is basically almost just a film orchestral soundtrack. It might be objectively better. So there is a nostalgia element. Like it might be just as good, you know, if John Williams did a game soundtrack, I'm sure it would be better than the Kid Chameleon soundtrack if you're a music theorist.
Take that, Williams.
But there was something about the fact that they were so hook driven and so catchy that like when I work now, I play this YouTube playlist that's all orchestral remasters of the Super Mario World soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And I'll never leave 90s gaming soundtracks. I think they are my heart.
Well, I mean, I certainly love them as well. My issue about it, you know, them being just better is just,
who's to say, right?
We're like horror movies better in the 80s than they are today. Well, I think so, but you know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
What I will agree with though is, the constraints of the time, produced or resulted in some really incredible music. I think it's pretty well known that constraints can be a real driver of creativity, right?
Yeah. But then like the constraint, like as a kid, I would play a video game for 1,000 hours that had 45 seconds of music in it.
That's the thing.
And it's like, I'm nostalgic for that stuff now, but like the reason I'm so nostalgic for the Legend of Zelda theme song is because it just looped. It's like 45 seconds of music that's just
Pavlovian. Yeah.
I think we have the pressure on the composer to make sure that they could loop something that didn't annoy the hell out of people, though.
Yeah. They have to make it like the most dope ass chorus you've ever heard in your life in order for you to hear it, you know, 100 times a night for months in a row.
Yeah, we have to be honest with ourselves that like a lot of this music stuck with us merely because we heard it repeated so many times. Like, is it better than, you know, most film scores? Well, I mean, most people don't watch movies more than once, I think. So the score goes over you once, you hear it one time, you're never going to remember a note of it. But if you watch that movie 1,000 times, then the score is probably going to start sticking with you.
Well, and a hook is a hook. So it's like and the way you work it into a song is important, how repetitive it is. Classical music has motifs that are show up more, perhaps more rarely than pop music, far more rarely. So you don't hear the hook as much. And so it's harder to, you know, acclimate to that. There are games that are orchestrated that have really good hooks that stick with you from the past generation, past early 2000s. I can think of Shadow of the Colossus. That game, like, that music's always going through my head. It's super hooky. It repeats all the time. You hear it a lot during the game, and it's orchestrated and great. You know, I put that up there with a fantastic soundtrack. Metroid Prime is similar. That game has like crazy electronic music, but it reinterprets the Metroid music in much, I think, cooler and better ways than the first Metroid game. Super Metroid has a really good soundtrack, but I like that stuff too. So sometimes those variations come back in like really cool ways.
I do wonder, like, the amount of like talent that came out of like early Japanese game developers on the composing side is like, you know, I don't just like that music because I heard it a million times as a kid. Like, Koji Kondo is genius, right? And like, you know, people like Yoko Shimomura, Capcom, that did the Street Fighter music, like, she's a genius. Like, that's incredible. And I'm like, is there something like, were they drawn to this new medium of video games, or like, did the constraints sort of force them to come up with like these incredible hooks? Like, I'm not really sure, but like, I feel like there's a disproportionate number of like bangers and like just talent that came out of that era that is still sort of reverberating through the video game industry today.
Yeah, it must have been cool at the time. You know, if you're in the 80s, you're like a composer making music for games. It's an entirely new field for music composers that just didn't exist a few years before, right? So I don't know. I always kind of thought, I'm sure that they were just like, well, pretty stoked to have a full-time job writing music.
And from a songwriting perspective, a lot of those games wrote songs. They wrote tunes or songs, whereas games now write scores, and scores can be, you know, as all this adaptive stuff. So while you're running around in Elden Ring, there's just a suspended strings going on in the background. There's no real music, you know, until you start a fight. And then same with Horizon 2. There's just a lot of just ambiance. And then kind of like, you know, maybe not that orchestration that might not have a lot of hooks, and that might just be bombastic or convey a feeling. You know, that's more like film scoring, and it's a really similar to TV scoring. Like, if you watch TV shows that have full scoring, like, you know, they're doing 24 episodes a season, and for the entire hour of that show, there's background music. Like, that's 24 probably. Like, that's a lot, you know? And so it's like, they're just not writing to the same same purposes. But I think those early games, because of the constraints, because of the demands of like making a repetitious track, they're really thought of as like little hooks and songs and ditties as opposed to background orchestration.
I miss the soaring, clear melody of the ditty. I do feel like I can't hum anything from Destiny 2. I just know that it really makes me feel like shooting stuff when I go into the area where you're supposed to shoot stuff. But I think the last one I remember, or that really sticks in my head, is like, I know every note of the Gregorian chant from the beginning of Halo. Halo was sort of in the middle of the transition. But
Mass Effect had memorable music because the people really liked the death scene. And that game had really cool instrumentation. So like, that was a whole nother way for it to stand out, is that it was using, you know, 70s synthesizers to make a futuristic soundtrack.
At the time.
Like, I love stuff like that.
Yeah. It was a unique soundtrack at the time. Yeah. Okay, running a little bit short on time. So that brings us to this week's Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Eric from Sweden. So it is Eric with a K. Let that be a hint to you.
I will not.
Let the questioning begin.
Does this game soundtrack feature a highly memorable hook melody that we could all hum?
I don't think so. I don't think that's... You would say
and
that.
Damon would be able to answer that very differently after today's Kid Chameleon conversation, if it was Kid Chameleon.
That's true.
So we've eliminated Kid Chameleon. Mm-hmm. Possibly Mega Man 3.
No.
Definitely Castlevania 1.
FF7. Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Does this game have chiptune style music pre-orchestrated?
No.
Very definitive. But did this game come out in the last 10 years?
Yes.
Since 2012. It's 2022 right now.
Thanks for doing the quick math there, Justin. Is this game a console exclusive?
Yes.
Is it for Sony?
Yes. That's 5.
Is it a PlayStation 4 console exclusive?
No.
Well.
let's see, doing some more quick math here. Is it a PlayStation 5 console exclusive?
Yes.
I feel like you didn't need to ask that, but also we eliminated the Vita, so thank you.
Yeah, it could have been, he could sneak a Vita game in there. So wait, so PS5 exclusive, there's not that many of them.
Right?
Eternal Deathloop.
Miles That's probably Morales.
yeah.
Ratchet and Clank.
You know what Miles Morales has a really good, something that video games do really well now is like real world music, like moments of like the best musical moments in games that have an actual soundtrack song coming into them.
We can eliminate Deathloop and well, I don't know where Returnal was developed, but Spider-Man was developed in the United States, right?
Housemarque did Returnal, so they're in Europe.
Europe, yeah.
So was this developed in the United States of America?
No.
All right.
So what are we left with? Deathloop or Returnal?
Yep, or a Japanese game.
Yeah, I mean, they're not the only two exclusives, but it's probably one of those two. Do you play as a woman?
Yes.
It's Returnal. I want to do one more just to narrow it down for sure.
I was going
to
ask if it featured a time loop, then I realized they both do.
yeah, it's funny.
Go for it.
Is this like a roguelike style game?
Yes, it is. And that's 10.
Is it Returnal?
Congratulations. The losing streak has been broken.
Oh, so boom, rude. Boom, boom, so boom. Rude.
It is Returnal with 11 questions. I congratulated you. But it's a good thing.
Backhanded.
You're not losers anymore.
Or
it's a spectrum. You're less losers than you were yesterday.
The winner is you now.
Returnal.
Yeah. Another tough, tough game that I finally fell off in the middle of and felt bad about myself.
Is this a Swedish company?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, actually, I don't know for sure.
Is it Housemarque with a K?
With a Q.
With a Q.
Yeah.
That's right.
Housemarque.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wait, no, that's not right.
Since you got that so early, I'm gonna answer. We're gonna do a lightning round. This question we got from Andrew from Augusta, Georgia. He's asking about, are there examples of sequels that forgave the mechanics of the previous games and went into a different direction and were disappointing?
I don't know. That seems what's in my brain, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what either of you are trying to say, but they abandoned the mechanics of the previous game.
They changed.
Can you think of a game that, you know, went too much of a different direction with the sequel? You wish it were more like the original, was the question.
Absolutely. I remember this was a thing at the time. I'm old enough to recall like the frustration among hardcore fans. I don't think anyone agrees with me anymore, but I think Fallout should be a top-down isometric board game with little pieces. I don't like the first-person turn that Fallout took. Even though New Vegas is one of my favorite storylines in any game period, especially the DLC content was phenomenally, like, emotionally connective to me. But I just liked the little AP bar and being from Arroyo and wandering around on the hex grid. I loved it.
I mean, something interesting about that is like Bethesda being the big AAA developer that they are kind of had no choice but to make this big, you know, summer blockbuster version of Fallout. But now that it's all under the Microsoft umbrella, like we could totally have our cake and eat it too. Like they could make some big AAA Fallout and we could get some more like traditional CRPG style Fallout. They should let Obsidian make it and use the Pillars of Eternity engine, that isometric RPG engine, and make a new Fallout in that style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, new Brotherhood of Steel game for sure.
I think that the in terms of like gameplay and controls, I really don't like the move from Assassin's Creed that now a lot of other people are doing, including Horizon to trigger based melee combat. I think that's silly.
It really threw me for a loop in Dying Light 2. I just find it hard to do the parkour.
It's so weird. I don't know. Like the face buttons make sense to me for that. And I like augmenting them with the shoulder and like kind of combining them. Like, I don't know. It just seems limiting to me. I don't really understand it.
Yeah. Didn't that come from Dark Souls though?
Maybe, but Assassin's Creed Origins is the first time I played a game where I had already played a game that like it transformed that into to the spirit of the question. Yeah.
Well, I thought for sure everyone would say Double Dragon 5.
Yeah.
Pac-Man
once they
2.
Took out the battles codes.
Well, Double Dragon 5 is the one-on-one fighting game, which is like, I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, Double Dragon's pretty old at that point, and Street Fighter 2 is the hottest thing in the world. But make it a spinoff. Don't make it a numbered sequel in the series.
What about Donkey Kong 3? They just change it to a vertical shooter.
Yeah. I have a lot of love for Donkey Kong 3, but I think when you reach level 4 or 5, it just becomes impossible.
Yeah. Invent the platformer, abandon the platformer was that series. Yeah.
In the earliest days of video games, you could just do whatever you wanted. There was no cops. Being a sequel didn't mean anything because there was no story to begin with.
You're Stanley now, and the bugs are attacking.
You also throw turnips in this one. Who cares?
Yeah. Mario 2 in the US would be a pretty good answer. My answer
is a great game.
You
wish Mario 2 were more like the first one?
No, I'm just saying, like, it's very different.
Big departure.
Like,
Floaty Princess.
My choice is Zelda 2, as is many people's.
I mean, yeah, I was going to mention that one, too.
I don't, like, that game's gone through a real arc of, like, for, you know, 20 years, kind of, like, nobody liked it, because then Link to the Past came out and gave people what they wanted. And then people came around and said, actually, Zelda 2 is pretty good. It doesn't deserve all the hate. But now I feel like it's come back around again, where they're like, nah, we don't need it.
Well, Zelda's
let's make Link bigger, but what should we do with a sword? Let's make it smaller.
It's so tiny. It's like such a tiny little sword. It is.
Zelda's the master dagger. Zelda's an interesting use case because they almost reinvent Zelda with every new entry.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. We only got, how many?
We found Majora's Mask upsetting because of the gameplay changes in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts. Even though I actually liked that game, I totally get that you know, it's not like a 3D platformer anymore. It's this 3D build a vehicle game. Mm-hmm. Sam, what about Metroid Other M?
Oh my God. I didn't want to think about that game. But it wasn't bad, but you know, what a weird
that's
turn.
A case. Now we are getting both, you know, with Dread. So I'm a big fan of Prime and Dread. That's all. Just that we're getting the 2D and the 3D. Historically.
Other M
was just some bullshit.
Yeah, there's a difference between, like, you know, Other M's just, like, not very good.
Yeah.
You know, like, not very good sequels come out all the time.
Yeah.
But it had crazy gameplay. It was, like, a locked camera that you, like, hopped around in front of. Like, so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like the 3D Land Mario games very much compared to others. I mean, they're fine, but I don't like that gameplay change. I'm surprised that series continues instead of like full 3D Mario or 2D Mario. There's like the Mario Land ones.
And it is really interesting. Like Super Mario 64 is in my top 5 games of all time. I don't think it'll ever not be in there. Like I absolutely adore it, but it's not a platformer. Like it's an exploration adventure. Like all of Mario is like jumping on enemies' heads and breaking bricks and like jumping around on platforms. And that's not, this game is like puzzle solving and running around these open levels and finding stars. It was a completely different thing, which I've always found really wild. Mm. And, you know, Odyssey sort of brought that back, that same ethos sort of forward into modern Mario.
Yep. Tetris 2 took a dumb turn. Check that out. And then check out Hatris and Wordtris.
What was the water one? Wetris?
Wetris.
Is that what it was called?
I think so. Also Tetris Sphere. Tetris World, is that another one? Maybe we're just making stuff up now. Okay, that's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Sam, Justin, Swain. Thank you for sitting in with us this week. Always a pleasure.
Swain Scoop.
Thank you to Alan working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. And we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.